Hayes Carl created a stir in the world of Americana music when he released his album Little Rock in 2005. He was 28. Our critic Robert Christgau thinks Carl's songwriting has matured since then, and that maturity sounds good.
Hayes Carl grew up around Houston, went to college in Arkansas, and lives in Austin. But he was seasoned in the roughneck bars west of Highway 87 on the beachfront peninsula that separates Galveston Bay from the Gulf of Mexico. He even called his label Highway 87. Here's the start of the laundry list of good old boy topics Hayes Carl wished he could have covered on that album.
Thrift store cowboys, five and dime junk, red dirt plowboys, asphalt monkeys, holy rollers, signal callers, truck stop angels, back street brawlers, Lance Ant groupies, guitar slangers, hallelujah, gospel singers, freight train mamas, pistol shooters, my first girlfriend works at Hooters.
That's a funny song, and 4 years later at 32, Hayes Carl still identifies as a good old boy on his major label debut, Trouble in Mind. But he's found out that being funny doesn't mean you can't get serious. The amused empathy of the hesitant romance in Girl Downtown has a well-meaning, John Prine-ish warmth that broadens his emotional repertoire.
There's a girl downtown with freckles on her nose, a pencil's in her pockets and a ketchup on her clothes. She's a real nice girl, pretty as a plate. The boys call her Katie when they ask her on a date. And who knows, Katie, maybe you could be the one. There's a boy outside standing in the rain, hands are in his pockets, he's wondering why he came. He's a real nice boy, slower than the fall. The girls call him Billy, if they're calling him at all. And who knows, Billy, maybe he could be the one.
That one ends with the couple holding hands down by the pond. A step in the right direction for Katie and Billy. Hayes Carl himself is a worldlier guy with raunchier tastes, as he makes clear in Drunken Poet's Dream.
I got a woman, she's wild as wrong. She likes to lay naked and be kissed upon. Well, she crosses a bridge and sets it on fire.
Remember, that naked woman is only a dream, a poet's dream. Later on, she, or maybe her evil twin, puts on some clothes and turns into a bad dream. On this song, A Lover Like You.
You kissed the chef, he quit the band. Now you're walking around with a ring on your head. You told me to lead it, I almost believed it was true.
Hayes Carl is what I look for in a singer-songwriter. Articulately, tunefully, he's rowdy and good for a laugh, later for the sensitive stuff. But it's sensitive stuff that puts Trouble in Mind over the top. That's where Katie and Billy come from. And on the next to last track, Willing to Love Again, it gives him the grace to admit he isn't always such a dreamboat himself.
Out of all the dreams in this whole world, how'd you get so unlucky, girl? To find a shell that had no pearl, and a man who couldn't find home.
The latest album from Hayes Carl is called Trouble in Mind. Robert Christgau writes about music for MSN.com.
Most times I probably expect too much. I spend my life on this broken crutch, and you believe I can fly. I walk the streets, I kick the...
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News. Tomorrow in New York City, four legends of Dominican bachata music will take the stage as part of the Chase Latino Cultural Festival.
Se me ha perdido una muñeca por ahí por la ciudad, que tiene unos ojos negros y una boca que no hay pa' majar.
What you're hearing is a style of bachata from the late 1960s that's little known outside of the Dominican Republic. It was most often heard in bars, bordellos, and at beachfront parties. Its tales of heartbreak and strife provide a window into the lives of poor Dominicans. And because of its rough edges, the music was despised by many in upper crust society. Bachata music from that era is having a small revival, thanks in part to a CD released last year called Bachata Roja, acoustic bachata from the cabaret era. Deborah Pacini-Hernandez is a professor at Tufts University. She wrote the liner notes for Bachata Roja, and she says one hallmark of the music is the instrumentation.
It was all guitar-based. That's one of the things that distinguishes it from other music. And it's a particular style of playing the guitar. It's a sort of arpeggiated picking rather than strumming.
Yo tengo miedo de mi secreto que ya no sé guardar.
It's always got lyrics, and the earlier ones tended to be quite romantic. Singing of love, you know, usually it's love lost and love desired.
Almost like the blues.
It's been compared to the blues in the past. It absolutely has. I think in terms of, you know, structurally, the kind of folks who were making it, people on the margins of society, this was the blues in some way. It's a little more cheerful, though, than the blues. Even songs where they're singing about, you know, the treachery of a woman. Some of them can still be, if you just listen to them musically, they still sound kind of sweet.
Yo te pido que te alejes y perdones y no te hagas ilusiones porque habrás de comprender.
The dictator of the Dominican Republic, mm-hmm. Rafael Trujillo, he absolutely despised this kind of music. Why did he have such strong feelings about this?
Well, he wanted music to be public, to be very high quality. So in fact, musicians had to pass a test. You had to get like a license. And unschooled musicians who were clearly country folk. They did not reflect the modern regime that Rafael Trujillo was trying to represent. So they didn't have a chance. People with middle class aspiration just ignored it, stayed away from it. And worse than that, gave it names, you know, called it names, because it initially, the word bachata meant just a backyard party. But in the 1970s, they started using it as an insult. You know, es una bachata, you know, sort of just to say, it's worthless. And of course, by now, it has become the term that everybody knows this music by. It's been accepted.
Do people still listen to it? Would I still, if I went to an area in this country where there's a large Dominican population, right here in Washington, D.C., would I still hear this kind of music?
Absolutely. You would hear the more modern versions, most likely, here in the States, because there's, you know, been 2-3 generations after them, younger people who don't resemble these old ones as much. They dress with hip, urban clothing. They've changed the instrumentation a little. Now, back in the Dominican Republic, you probably would find that more contemporary bachata, the well-produced bachata, but I'll bet that in the countryside, you still have the little, you know, trios, neighborhood trios, you know, playing their music on weekends in a little country store or a little bar. I think that sort of more grassroots bachata, I'm pretty sure, is still going on.
That was Professor Deborah Pacini-Hernandez. She's a professor of anthropology at Tufts University. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
You can listen to examples of early acoustic bachata at the music section of our website. That's npr.org.
O la pago yo, o la paga ella, o la pago yo, o la paga ella. La mujer que tengo, eso parte el alma. La mujer que tengo, eso parte el alma.
Today, John McCain's presidential campaign accused Barack Obama of playing the race card, quote, from the bottom of the deck, for making this statement.
They're going to try to say that I'm a risky guy. They're going to try to say, well, you know, he's got a funny name. And he doesn't look like all the presidents on the dollar bills and the $5 bills.
The Obama campaign denied using racial politics, but at the same time found itself confronting another feature of the racial minefield. It came from hip-hop artist Ludacris, a new song that praises Obama and harshly attacks John McCain and President Bush.
Paint the White House black, and I'm sure that's got him terrified. McCain don't belong in any chair unless he's paralyzed. Yeah, I said it because Bush is mentally handicapped. Ball up all of his speeches and just throw them like candy wrap.
The lyrics also diss Hillary Clinton and Jesse Jackson. The Obama campaign immediately condemned the song, calling it outrageously offensive. It quickly became a topic on conservative talk radio. Kevin Merida is an associate editor at the Washington Post. He's written about how the Obama campaign deals with the race issue. Welcome back to the program.
Hey, thank you, Michelle.
First, I want to talk about the charges of using the race card. It's interesting because Obama was trying to say that the McCain campaign was the one using racial scare tactics by pointing out his race. It seems like while the candidates were running away from the issue of race for months, it's now that they're using it as some sort of cudgel or weapon.
You know, it's the elephant in the room in this election for Obama. I mean, he's been dogged repeatedly by internet rumors, his name, his background. And what he's trying to do is say that don't try to frighten voters, and he's trying to turn that on to the McCain campaign, turn that around to an advantage for him. In this case, you know, I don't know that McCain himself specifically, but the larger fabric of the opposition, they certainly have planned to use such tactics and try to make Obama seem someone uncomfortable for American voters.
You know, it's a question of how they use the tactics, whether it's done in overt ways or perhaps more subtle ways. Some have suggested that the recent McCain ad about Obama's celebrity also has a racial subtext by juxtaposing Barack Obama with the images of two blonde celebrities. Is this a case where people might be looking for racism under every rock, or is it this kind of static that hangs out there in the air?
You know, it's particularly hard for pioneers. The racial pioneers carry a lot of weight, whether you're Oprah or Will Smith, whether you're Thurgood Marshall. There are so many expectations, but at the same time, you know, you want to be authentic to yourself. And so in the Ludacris case, you see that Obama is someone who has embraced hip-hop culture. He has said that he had Ludacris on his iPod. And at the same time, he is somebody who has also said that he doesn't support misogyny and has problems with the kind of lyrics that some rappers have used. And he would love to have rap songs that his girls could listen to. So his condemnation is he's representing himself, and he's also not trying to throw the entire culture under the bus.
This song by Ludacris, it seems like it could be problematic on a few different levels. First, there are the offensive lyrics, but there's also the sentiment about painting the White House black. And some in the Obama camp privately said that lyrics like that worry them, that they are concerned that it might make some white voters uncomfortable.
Well, it plays into an image that they worry about, that he be seen as kind of the black president, you know, the president for black America, like a Chris Rock movie or something. And he has tried his best to suggest that he's going to be the president for everyone. And so, of course, they don't want to have that kind of lyric. And at the same time, you understand the excitement and the euphoria. I mean, this is the last great barrier to be removed in American public life, to have an African-American as president. Many African-Americans had never thought that they would see that during their lifetimes. And so to have it this close, people can taste it, and they really have a lot of expectations. They want him to really be them.
Washington Post reporter Kevin Merida is an associate editor of the paper. Thanks for talking to us again, Kevin.
Thank you, Michelle.
Finally this hour, music that fuses styles of the southern U.S. with northeast Brazil. It's by a group called Nation Beat, for Americans and two Brazilians. The group is out with its second album called Legends of the Preacher. Here's our reviewer, Banning Air.
American and Brazilian musicians have often found common ground since jazz artists turned to bossa nova 50 years ago. But the result has never sounded quite like this. The singer channeling Hank Williams here is Liliana Araújo from Fortaleza in northeast Brazil. This region is home to a rich variety of highly rhythmic folk traditions. The most important one for Nation Beat is called Maracatu, and it sounds like this. Nation Beat founder, drummer and percussionist Scott Kettner fell in love with this rhythm and spent nearly 2 years in Brazil immersing himself in it. He heard maracatu as a distant cousin of the funky backbeat used by New Orleans brass bands, and from there, the connections kept coming. That reedy fiddle is actually a Brazilian rabeca, played here by classically trained violinist Sky Steele. And listen to the way the band pivots from southern rock back into Brazilian funk. In Nation Beat's music, European, African, and Latin sensibilities come together in the spirit of a Friday night party after a week of hard work. That scenario works in both Brazilian and American contexts, but just when you start to think you've got this band figured out, they're apt to throw you a curve, like a shot of Jewish wedding music tossed into the mix. Nation Beat's sound raises provocative questions about how music evolves and changes and moves around the world, but you can ignore all that and just enjoy the sweet melodies and driving grooves. Threaded through these 15 songs is the tale of an ill-fated preacher who meets his end at the hands of a whiskey-drinking outlaw. Take it as a metaphor for the risks and rewards of unexpected cultural collisions.
Banning Air is senior editor at Afropop.org. He was reviewing the album Legends of the Preacher by Nation Beat. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.